Christoph Berkey. I'm a psychiatrist in Bern, and I've been with heroin prescription from the very beginning, which is, if I recall it right, 1993 we started with that. Mm-hmm. And I think you should, if we talk about prescribing heroin in Switzerland, we should also mention the time before that.
Oh, yes.
Because there was a very, very big open drug scene here. We'll walk past the park where that drug scene was. Okay. We really had an epidemic of heroin overdose for a small country, 6 million people. It was extraordinary. Some up to 500 persons a year died of heroin overdose. Now, I know in the US you have a bigger epidemic not right now, but size-wise, it was still very significant.
Approximate population of Switzerland.
Six million.
6 million. Yeah, that's a large number. 6.5 million
it was. Yeah. 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 And so we just needed to have new ways, and that was one of the new ways. There was different new ways and initiatives. One was a safe consumption room. Mm-hmm. That exists also until today in Bern, as well as in many other cities, where people can go consume their own drugs,
right?
With supervision. That they bring with under supervision.
Yes, yeah. I've been to Insight in Vancouver, which is probably similar.
Yeah, yeah, very much. I've visited it like a week after it was opened, and it's very similar to our injection. So that was really a major initiative from big cities in the mid-90s to find ways to close down those huge open drug scenes.
Sure.
And an important element was the heroin prescription. Of course, we couldn't just do it like that. We needed a legal basis for it. And we did this within a research frame. Mm. So this was a huge multi-center study, as we call it. It's called PROVE, P-R-O-V-E, where sort of we did it under that research umbrella. So it was.
How large of an undertaking, a project was that to prove?
In the beginning, it was like some 800 patients and some 16 or 18 centers. All around Switzerland.
Good.
And the research was important. It wasn't a gold standard research in the sense as you would do it in medical science to prove something, like in the sense of a gold standard where you have two groups that you directly compare
one
with each
placebo
other.
Group, maybe.
Even placebo, which is difficult to prescribe. Placebo, if
how
you're heroin dependent, you would immediately realize that it's placebo.
Where's my heroin?
Right. So that sort of methodological. No, it's not a flaw, but it's it can be improved methodologically.
But it was the best potential or possible, right?
At the time, it was what we could do. What we did basically was we started taking people in. We couldn't take in everyone.
Right.
We could only take in people who had a certain history of addiction, who had several attempts of quitting with the heroin addiction. Mostly methadone, but also inpatient detox. That would have to prove, or we would have to prove together with them, that they really tried to stop in other ways.
Yeah.
They needed to have certain social or psychological or somatic complications of their addiction.
Right.
So in the end, we could only take them off and take them in and get permission if we could prove all those things.
Yes.
And then we started and you will find how it works in detail.
Well, Christoph, what you're saying about, you know, these the patients more or less having to prove the need or the mental framework that would allow them to go ahead and use the heroin. Dr. Julau there in Portugal was talking about they have the dissuasion committees that try to convince people to quit using drugs, but some people say, no, I'm a heroin user, I will keep using it. And therefore, they're allowed to continue, you know, without interference.
It's nicely put, the dissuasion committee. Actually, this is just part, of course, of our everyday work. It was at the time. And that's, I think, is the most important aspect of heroin prescription. You treat patients. Of course, you give them out heroin, and that's why they come to you. Mm-hmm. But it provides a whole opportunity to treat, to talk, to provide social support, housing, finances, and so on, to provide medical support, to provide psychiatric support. Many of those people have dual diagnosis in the psychiatric sense. They have maybe psychosis or depression or anxiety disorders.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I would surmise, I have no proof of this, but I would surmise that many of these people who use drugs and wind up on heroin have suffered penalty or ostracized by either law enforcement or family or whomever,
yeah,
for their drug use, which may lead them even further in that direction.
Of course, many of the people who entered the program had a previous history of court problems, of prison stays, of delinquency in some sort, of course.
Yes,
and that was also one of the findings, one of the most important findings also, besides that people simply survive their addiction. Another important finding was that rates of criminalization of delinquent behavior decreased massively once patients have entered the program.
I would guesstimate a couple of reasons why. One is they're no longer having to devote time looking for heroin, and perhaps no longer having to scrape up money with which to buy heroin.
Of course, yeah. That's a very important thing. They have a structure during the day. They get up and they go to bed at some time. They have two times where they need to appear in the distribution center in the clinic, and they get their heroin, and they don't need to run around, they don't need to prostitute themselves or rob old ladies of their handbags or do worse things, or by the way, deal with drugs. They don't need to do that as well.
Right.
So that's a massive. Improvement over the life of an addict before he or she enters a program.
Hi, this is Dean Becker. I wanted to remind you, you're listening to Cultural Baggage on Pacifica Radio and the Drug Truth Network. This interview was recorded in Bern, Switzerland, in the office of Dr. Christoph Berkey. He's the designer of the long-term, very successful Swiss heroin injection program.
We talked briefly out there on the street about the U.S. having a major problem.
Yeah.
60,000 dead last year, they say. And I closed my radio program with this thought. Because of prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please, be careful.
Yeah.
And I think that's at its worst in the United States, best I understand it, with the fentanyl, carfentanil, the mixture that's being sold, and people just don't know what they're taking. I wonder how often it even contains heroin. Your response, please.
Of course, that's one of the major issues. If you're a drug addict on the street, you just have to consume or take whatever your dealer sells you as being heroin. And that can be, especially, we also do street surveys of street drugs. Up to today, in the canton of Bern, regular samples are taken in the low-threshold street agency. And it's really a problem because it contains between 2 or 3% of heroin up to 40 or 60% of heroin.
Oh, my.
And that's a very, very dangerous situation. Yeah. And many people might can overdose on those situations. If you're used to heroin of 5% and then you suddenly get heroin, street heroin of 60%, it can be a death penalty.
There you go.
It can be really, really dangerous. So, of course, that's one of the things even up to today, where we've done it 25 years now almost, I'm not aware of a single patient who has died of an overdose in a heroin injection.
Right.
Of a heroin injection in a heroin prescription clinic. Not a single overdose death.
That's wonderful. The best outcome you could hope for, right?
I think it's for the individual patient, it's the best outcome one can hope for. It is. And also many people, one big criticism of heroin prescription is that you keep patients forever, sort of for the rest of their life. Which, for some patients, it's true. One has to say, it's true. They are so heavily addicted, and they can, despite all the motivational efforts by staff and psychotherapists, doctors, social workers, they cannot be motivated, they cannot be pushed into trying to quit or doing something different, which is one of the issues, of course. But then again, those people, would they find a way out if they lived just on the street of street heroin? Probably not. Most of them would be dead by now.
Yeah. Well, right, because the impurities, the...
Yeah.
And again...
lifestyle.
And not knowing what is in that bag.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I said, there was a gentleman, one of the founding members of Johns Hopkins University, a very prestigious outfit over there in the U.S. He was known as a lifelong morphine addict.
Yeah.
He was, and I'm trying to remember his name, but he was declared to be the father of modern surgery. He was that good.
Yeah.
And I often like to ask folks, if he were your surgeon, would you want him to have his fix before or after he cuts you open? And I think he should have it before he cuts me open. But he had a very productive life just the same. And do you find some of your patients nonetheless have a very productive life despite?
Of course. That's the ultimate goal of the program, to have a fulfilling or productive life somehow. That might mean totally different things for different people. It might mean that you have a job, that you have a family. For others, it might mean that you don't die of suicide, or you don't die of a major mental illness. So that's it's an individual thing, what is a fulfilling life.
Right.
But that's the ultimate goal, of course. In all the treatments that we do as doctors, as institutions.
Right. Well, and it's very admirable. That's why I'm here, to learn about it. My hope, my goal, and again, I'm a former cop. I want to legalize all drugs.
Yeah.
I want
them
to be made by Merck and Pfizer, not some Mexican farmer who's mixing cartel.
Fentanyl
together.
Yeah. May I say something to that? Because I have been to the U.S. as well, last year, and with a big smile, I drove through Colorado and listened to the radio ads of marijuana.
How good this one is, bad versus the other. Yes.
I think it's great that tendency that. Mariana is taken out to punish somebody because he consumes marijuana. It's frankly quite a stupid thing to do.
Yes.
However, I think it's a bit problematic. As a psychiatrist, I'm of course aware that marijuana is not without risks.
No.
And if we talk about legalization, I would very strongly think we should prohibit commercial advertising for those products.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Basically, same with cigarettes and alcohol. It shouldn't be advertised on TV and cinemas, on billboards somewhere.
And glamorous. Yeah.
And the same thing we shouldn't do with drugs, be it marijuana, be it whatever psychoactive substance. Bit of a criticism towards the legalization movement in the US. It goes like from one extreme, the total demonization of a relatively harmless substance called marijuana, to a consumer product that even needs advertising. And
it doesn't need much advertising at all.
It's a bit extreme, those pendulum swings.
Sure. I like to look back. The United States had a 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act, which said that up till then it had been snake oil salesmen and, you know, buy this, it'll give you a billion or whatever. But the truth was that the 1906 Act required that the manufacturer label very specifically what was in the product.
Yeah.
And I think that's, we could stop right there because... Like I told Dr. Julau, that, you know, if there's kerosene and foot fungus in the cocaine, which there is coming out of Colombia because of the manufacturing process, maybe small amounts, but if somebody likes kerosene and foot fungus and they're willing to buy it, seeing it there on the label, then we ought to let them buy it. And I guess the point I'm getting at is, you know, people are going to do brave things. I think that's a lot of what drug use is bravado, thinking I can face down this lion. Yeah. I can do it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm drifting off here. But I think the point I'm getting at is that there are a lot of factors that lead people to take drugs. Yeah. And I'm not saying that kerosene and foot fungus is one. But I'm just saying through labeling the product.
Yeah. Yeah.
People would know exactly what they're buying, and they would be liable
for
that. Then we could judge people by their actions like we used to, and rather than the baggie in their pocket. Your response to that, please.
Well, it's a philosophical question because we're in both our societies very far away from such things. And our compromise in Switzerland, and I think it's not a bad compromise, is starting prescribing it through doctors. The heroin, the heroin is strong stuff, one must admit, and it is... you can get old with it, of course, but it doesn't go easily. It does have side effects. It also restricts your life at the moment, the way it's prescribed in the clinic. There's no take-home doses of heroin. It's no fun to be a patient in a heroin prescription clinic.
Yes.
But it's a compromise. It's medicalized through that. It's made sure that what patients get and take is clean and pure. And maybe also one more aspect, I think it's important to realize, it's also the heroin prescription, giving out the heroin every day is only a mean to get into touch with people.
Sure.
And to really get them into treatment. I think that's the biggest value of this type of program, that you can get in touch with people. You see them every day, twice. You can intervene when they have a pneumonia, many of them are HIV positive. We started at the time when we didn't have antiretroviral substances yet.
And it was taking off.
And it was exploding, right? Yes. The numbers were exploding. Or they have hepatitis C or all those things. And you see them, you can intervene. You can, when somebody gets psychotic because of their underlying psychosis, you can medicalize them with antipsychotic medication. You can give them out antidepressants if they're depressed and so on. You can do psychotherapy for certain situations in order for them to find a way to deal with their problems in life. So there's a lot of things you can do in that accompanying treatment, and they are only possible because your patients come to you.
Once again, a reminder, you're listening to Cultural Baggage on Pacifica Radio. This interview was recorded in the office of Dr. Christoph Berkey in Bern, Switzerland. Got a lot smarter.
Now, in the U.S., there's talk of legalizing marijuana at the federal level.
Yeah.
But then there's this roadblock that's always put up that, oh, we can't do that. We're party to the U.N. treaties and it wouldn't allow for. And it brings me to my next question to you. How did you get through or work around that situation?
You're asking me something that you should ask somebody from the federal government. I'm sorry, I'm not quite aware. If I remember it right, they did. What's clear is that members of the United Nations Narcotics Control Bureau, they have been here several times. They have visited and overall were absolutely impressed and impressed by the quality of the treatment, by the seriousness, how it was done. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to complain about anything in that regard. So it is possible within UN framework to do something like that. There's no doubt.
Hard to chastise you for success and keeping people alive, right?
It is.
All right. Well, I was just going to say, Dr. Berkey, if you would, tell me what I'm leaving out. What should we let my listeners know about the success of your project?
Basically, walk around Bern, have a look around. There's no corner in Bern that you cannot walk around on.
The criminality
is so much down. Drug-related crime, delinquency, petty crimes, stealing, all those things. It's so much better nowadays than it was 25 years ago. That alone is a huge success story. And on the individual level, you have many, many lives were saved. You have
for long.
Many people who are still dependent on drugs somehow. For some of them, it's a phase in their life. For some of them, it's a phase that never ends. Or for some of them, still, it is a phase that ends their life. But overall, many, many people have survived or even survived in good health. Basically, unfortunate addiction.
Right. Well, you know, I grew up in the 60s. I tried heroin. I never did like downers. It just didn't appeal to me. I got into speed for a while and the notice that I was going to have a son kind of caused that to end, you know, affection for the speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think in many cases that tends to be the case, that a job or a wife or a kid or some other happening to your life tends to help many people, you know, walk away from their dangerous part of their habit, at least.
Yeah.
Has that proven to be true for many of these addicts, or were you dealing more with the more serious, committed addicts, I guess, as well?
Basically, from epidemiological research, we know that this is very true, that a lot of people use drugs, maybe even have an addiction over a certain time in their late teens, in their 20s, and once in their 30s, they start thinking about families, about career, and so on, and they stop.
Yeah.
It's the same with cigarettes, it's the same with excessive alcohol drinking, it's the same with drugs generally. However, in the heroin prescription program, as I lined out before, we have serious people with serious addictions, with a lot of comorbidities of psychological nature. So they tend not to be that easy population that can sort of, at the blink of an eye, quit their habit and go on with their
lives. Time's up, I'm done with this. Yeah.
this is more something I do nowadays. I have still a lot of patients with some sort of drug problem. For example, nowadays young people, they tend to take more MDMA.
Dr. Berkey, I want to thank you for your candid for being so candid with us, and for sharing your thoughts. And the last question I want to present here is that our president is talking about people who sell drugs, they need to be killed. That's what he's been saying consistently for the last few weeks, that their lives are just not worth prolonging another moment. You were not talking about selling drugs, but it just seems such a, I don't know how to phrase this without trying to drag you into something political. Okay.
I have my opinion.
Okay.
It's a war on drug. It's a typical statement of a war on drug person. I mean, we as a society, we have tried war on drugs for countless years. I think the war on drug was formally declared by Richard Nixon, if I recall it right. It has not proven to work. It has not proven to work. Let's look at the situation in the US. It's worse than ever. Despite all the law enforcement efforts going into combating drugs, into having that war on drugs. So all he can say is more of the same, or even inhumane approaches to that war on drugs.
He says we have to get tough.
I can't understand it. It's just not understandable how somebody can say something like that. And how, I mean, he's also supported by many religious people in your country, I know. How can somebody support a person who says such crazy things with such disrespect for life? It's incredible.